This is the one where Barb is an Aztec goddess.
And Ian is the greatest warrior of all time.
And Susan's pathetic whelp.
And the Doctor falls in love.
And gets engaged over hot cocoa.
It's called The Aztecs.
Here we go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space.
Encountering Dalek, Stalinood, and the Cybertronic race.
Saltarans look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales.
And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales. Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when? Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please. Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than
who back when?
Who back when?
Hello, and welcome to episode 6 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin.
And I'm Flat Flat.
Flat Flat, that's new.
Yeah, why not?
I like it. Oh. Yeah, keeping it fresh. today we are discussing The Aztecs.
Yeah, you know, I enjoyed it. It wasn't quite up to the levels of Keys of Marinus for me. But
spoiler alert.
But we're not there yet.
We're not there. That should be another part of the drinking game, by the way. The Who Back When drinking game is whenever we say, we're not there yet, or it doesn't matter.
Or we'll talk about that later, and then never do. A bit like an episode of Doctor Who. Something comes up, it seems really important, and then is never discussed again.
Yeah, we'll get to that in this one as well. Oh my god, now drink. All right, so we're talking about The Aztecs. It's a four-parter, and... should we launch straight into it?
I think so.
Okay, before doing so, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, thank you so much for listening. You're a great person for listening to us right now.
You people are great. Like, seriously.
Yeah. Keep tweeting us. Keep sending us messages and mini-reviews. They're fantastic. Mm-hmm. And what I was going to say was, in fact, not only will we be summarizing and reviewing this ourselves, as we always do, but we will also be including some list of feedback.
Yeah, I can't actually remember how many we have this time, but we're going to have to curtail them, I think.
We'll see.
Not curtail, make them a little bit shorter.
Yeah,
because it's just going to take up like an hour of the show. An hour of the hour and a half show.
Okay.
But we're not there yet.
All right, so here we go.
Back to the Aztec era.
Here we go, dude. Yeah. You ready?
I'm ready.
Let's do this. All right, part one, The Temple of Evil. It is fantastic. We start off with like a maybe 2 second fade out from the miniature.
Oh, it's a great miniature.
That we saw
We've already talked about that. What a brilliant miniature.
But isn't it amazing that they included like maybe, I'm being generous here, maybe 2.5 seconds of that miniature at the start of this episode. It's like, we're so freaking proud of this, and Timmy the intern spent like 7 weeks building it. We have to feature it in every episode going forward.
Value for money.
Anyway, the TARDIS materializes inside an Aztec tomb.
Well, we don't know that yet.
Okay,
Actually, we do pretty much.
Yeah. It materializes, the doors open, Barb and Susan step out of it, and they realize that they are actually in an Aztec tomb. There's a dead body covered in jewelry, and Barb proceeds to indulge in some harmless grave robbery. Maybe 15 seconds into episode one.
But very luckily, Barb is actually an expert on the Aztecs. Like, this is her specialist area. Isn't that wonderful? Well,
doesn't she even say, like, oh, it's the later period of the Aztec civilization or something?
She actually gives a year. I can't remember what she said, but it's like 1420 something.
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever. But she actually gives a tiny little history lesson. Like, as we talked about before, like,
we're talking about the Aztecs and Cortez and
Doctor Who's meant to be educational. And Susan educates us. She tells Barb, Barbara tells Susan all about the Aztecs, and, you know, in doing so, we learn a little.
Yeah, we totally do. It almost seems a bit ham-fisted, to be honest, in my opinion. It seems a little bit ham-fisted. Like, okay, we need to make this as educational as possible,
set the scene, because she does tell Susan a little bit about how brutal the Aztecs were.
That's true.
And, you know, why we should be afraid of what the Aztecs might do to them.
Yeah, basically.
Henceforth, yeah.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get that.
But there are more comments about that as well later on from the doc, I think.
But she drops a lot of facts, and, you know, it's quite interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. She steals this bracelet.
Yes.
Like, there is an instance of grave robbery right off the bat. She steals this snake bracelet from the dead body before her.
Yeah.
Because she respects it so much. Puts it on.
Yeah, she specialized in this area, don't forget.
But she has no idea what this bracelet means.
Well, to be honest, Cortez, later in this episode, is presented as a good guy, who only stops the Aztecs because he thinks they're a little bit too brutal.
Yeah, basically.
So, in a way, she respects what Cortez does, so grave robbing, okay.
Yeah.
Like, it fits into her worldview.
And correct me if I'm wrong, you're much more of a historian than I am, but did Cortes not also indulge in grave robbery? I mean, there was a lot of murder and slaughter and also stealing of gold objects.
Anything you can think that you could have possibly done wrong when visiting the Aztecs, Cortes did.
Yeah.
So,
I'm
by no means an expert on the Aztecs, but Cortes, as far as I'm aware, is one of the worst people of all time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, anyway, Susan then sees this mural of people talking and basically curtails the educational parts of episode one by going, look, cartoons, they've even got bubbles coming out of their mouths.
Yeah, and like from the astrophysicist child.
Yeah, this is a clever, clever person who looks at an Aztec mural and says that it looks like a cartoon.
Yeah. But it's a nice segue for what happens next.
Yeah, exactly, because the mural turns out to be a door.
Yep. And,
do you want to take it from here?
Well, the next thing that happens is a weird Aztec guy dressed in funny Aztec clothes appears.
Yeah, Bob steps through the door and is greeted by this dude.
Yeah, and this dude comes up, he's like, I can't remember exactly what he says.
He says, woman, what are you doing here? This temple belongs to the high priest Yataxa.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm.
You're right. And then a bunch of other guys turn up in, like, Wizard of Oz hats.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And take Barb away.
They look like child-friendly versions of, like, fairy tale wizards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But actually, I think it's a really good episode introduction.
Mm.
Like, it is actually intriguing.
Oh, very much so.
You don't know what these people are doing. You don't know why they're taking her away. Something vaguely religious seems to be going on.
Exactly.
It's quite, it's quite deep.
Yeah, 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 totally. Susan runs back in, fetches the others.
Yes. And they, so... Does she?
Yeah, she does.
Okay.
Okay.
Fine. Pick it up.
Dude, you just watched this.
Shut up. All right.
So she goes back in. Ian and the doc are just then stepping out of the TARDIS, and she says, like, yeah, so Barb went out and whatever,
mm-hmm.
and the door has swung closed again. And the doc basically goes, like, I told her never to go away anywhere on her own.
Yeah. Which is quite good advice.
Yeah.
Like, given what's gone on in the past.
Yeah. He will venture against his own advice later on in this story arc.
Yeah, but the doctor's a law unto himself. He can.
Yeah, like, fair enough.
Like, yeah.
Anyway, so they open the door again, they step outside, and they're greeted by these dudes again, who at this point... Drink.
No, first of all, like, they look out across this amazing city that, you know, is clearly...
Is that before? Yeah, that, oh, yeah, you're
yeah,
right.
Yeah, it is.
It's so, totally, yeah.
So presumably that's Tecnocniclan, which is the only good word I have for Aztec city. Well, the only good word I know about the Aztecs. Tecnocniclan was the, like, main city.
The main city.
Yeah.
But it...
Like, I couldn't name another one.
Let's just take a moment to marvel at these mad paintings, because they are on another level. I mean, in terms of mm-hmm. how production value has gone so far, we've had mad paintings of, like, you know, the corridors with the Daleks or the pillars in Marinus.
Oh, yeah.
But this is on an entirely another level. Like, we have a pyramid, we've got a city, there's actual depth in it.
Yeah.
It's really well done.
Like, the show is established now.
Oh, totally.
Budget's in.
Yeah. Very nice. So you're right. So they see that.
And the Doctor reiterates at that point, after looking at the city, realizes it's the Aztecs, and reiterates to the audience and to Ian and to Susan, like, how terrible the Aztecs can be.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, totally.
So we've got this big sense of foreboding. Oh my God, Barb's going to be slaughtered.
Yeah, exactly. Then the door closes
uh-huh.
behind them. Like, oh no, what the hell? And he even says, like, oh yeah, these doors, they were designed to prevent grave robbers
mm-hmm.
from entering. From entering, not from exiting or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
But did not Barb prevent
is a,
Barb.
Barb is a grave robber.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So then they turn up, the dudes.
Yeah, but it's interesting when they turn up. It's not quite what you expect. They're not angry. They're not all over them. They actually honour the Doctor and Ian. Susan's ignored. But the Doctor and Ian are quite well honoured.
Yeah, they're led by this dude, the High Priest Ortlok.
Yeah. Who's a good guy.
He is a decent chap. Yeah. And they don't want to say where Barbara is.
He deserved a better end than he got, but anyway.
Yeah, they don't want to say where Barbara is.
Mm-hmm.
They just go, hey, you will see the woman you came with soon enough.
Yeah.
In the meantime, you are our guests, basically, and they take them away to what is essentially a cell, in my opinion.
Can't actually remember where they take them.
No, wait! shit, we forgot about Maybelline. Okay, so, yeah, that's what I called him in my notes.
Maybelline.
All right, so, sorry, guys, don't worry. We'll get back on track. They meet the dude. He says, we'll escort you to the one who wears the bracelet of Yataxa.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately upon exiting the temple, they see a man with, like, the most haphazard application of lipstick ever, who, in my notes, by the way, is referred to...
Oh, my God, that's clearly face paint. You can't call that haphazard application of lipstick. It's ear to ear. Like, it's clearly meant. Yeah. I think that's actually accurate, isn't it, to what Aztec, like, religious leaders would have dressed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
it's fine.
Sure. Anyway, yeah. For this reason, in my notes, occasionally I will refer to him as either Maybelline, the L'Oreal Aztec of the Year, or simply lipstick.
I've got to say, I wasn't offended by the way he looked. I think he looked okay. Like, he looked very, very sinister. Like,
oh, he looked so sinister.
Absurdly sinister. But, like, I think in terms of the way he was dressed, it was fine.
He's totally the Iago of this story, by the way.
Iago.
Othello. Shakespeare.
Oh, right.
You're English, dude.
Yeah,
anyway.
Sorry.
So, oh, yeah. And the doctor asks Ian and Susan, you know who he is, don't you? The local butcher, by the look of him, says Ian.
Yeah.
And the doctor responds by saying, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, it is pretty clear this dude is a bad mother effer.
Well, it is pretty clear, and yeah, that builds our sense of foreboding.
Yeah. So they're escorted away, Ortlok and Lipstick, they talk about when it will rain.
Well, they talk about blood sacrifice. They actually do discuss it, and Ortlok reveals, I'm not too hot on blood sacrifice. Like,
but he doesn't say that.
Well, he kind of, like, doesn't like the
idea. Oh, actually, no, sorry, you are right. He says, like, it'll come regardless of if there's a sacrifice or not.
Yeah, I mean, your Maybelline guy, yeah, he's all for it. Like, that's basically his goal in life, is to sacrifice people.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ortlok, not so hot.
By the way, before we go on, do you know exactly what Maybelline's function is? Like, what is he? He's not the priest.
Yeah.
What is he?
No, they make it quite clear, like, quite near the start. They do talk about the division of duties between these two men. Like,
okay.
Ortlok is, like, the leader of knowledge.
Yeah.
Like, he knows all
high
the knowledge.
Priest of knowledge, yeah,
high priest of knowledge. And Maybelline guy is the high priest of, like, sacrifice. Like,
okay, that makes sense.
Is actually his job.
Yeah.
So for him to defend the idea of sacrifice, like, does kind of make sense because it is his job.
Even though
if they stopped sacrificing, he would no longer have a job.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
Yeah.
He is all for it, but he knows that the sacrifice has no real function.
Yeah.
In my opinion, he's just there because it gives him a certain power.
That's not even an opinion. Like, later in the episode, we will get there. But he's like, talking about eclipses and, like, he knows the rain's coming and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he knows it's all fraudulent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Like, anyway, so, cut to the cell where we've got Susan, Doc, and Ian.
Yeah, and they're brought in to see Barbara.
Yeah.
And it's actually quite reminiscent of
Marinus.
Episode.
Oh, yeah.
Where she's...
she's got an attitude.
They come in, and, well, she's basically the queen when they come in Marinus. And again, it seems to have happened again.
Yeah.
Barbara, everywhere she goes, is, like, held up as some sort of goddess. It's
Totally. I think it is absolutely amazing, though, how quickly all these things happen.
Yeah.
You know, like, she is playing
episode.
The part. Yeah, well
it's
done.
It's a 20-minute episode. They've got to pack it in.
Okay, that's true.
Yeah. But, she seems to love it. It's her natural position is to be, like, the queen.
Yeah.
Because she just takes it up with such grace and elegance. Yeah.
And she explains to them, okay, because she stole this bracelet from the dead person, they now think that she is the, like, manifestation of the god Yataxa.
Yeah.
And we have this fantastic little scene where Ian can't pronounce the name Ortlok.
Yeah, well,
soundbites?
Fair enough. I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, if you wanted a soundbite there, sorry, no soundbites. Whose fault is that? Flap flaps.
I think that's a fair. I think that's a fair enough. Like. little problem he had there. If I went back to Aztec times, I think I'd mispronounce quite a few things.
Yeah, but isn't it funny because the doctor has been mispronouncing his name the entire time?
But in this episode, everybody mispronounces everything to the point, and we discussed this while we were watching it, like, certain characters are called different things by the same people at different points in the episode. Like, there isn't actually a consistency in the way things are pronounced. Like, we weren't sure whether it was Yotaxa, Yokaxa.
No,
like,
that's true.
It's said consistently incorrectly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Lipstick, by the way, his name is probably Katoxel or Klatoxel.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
sometimes it's said with an L, sometimes not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's fine.
I agree, it's not consistent. Anyway.
I'll live with it.
So, She explains she's now supposedly the goddess. The Aztecs leave them just for them to themselves for a little bit. Yeah. And the Doctor clarifies sort of one of the rules of this storyline. If the Aztecs...
Crime director.
Yeah, if the Aztecs realize... There are two directors, really.
Yeah.
Number one is, shit, I'm doing this every time. Like, whenever I want to say something, I always have 2 points. Anyway.
Get on with it.
So, number one is, he says, if the Aztecs realize that you're not who they think you are, we will all die.
Yeah. So she needs to pretend to be a goddess and pretend to know everything. That's the other thing.
Exactly.
Said. Like, if they ask you a question you don't know the answer to, avoid the question.
Yeah.
Like, you have to pretend to be an all-knowing goddess.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And the second point is the prime directive. It's like, yeah, we can't fuck with history.
Yeah. Yeah. No matter what it takes, as we'll find out very soon.
Exactly. That point is reiterated so many times in the storyline. Yeah. So then Lipstick and Ortlok, they arrive, and they basically ask Barb to let the people know that she's around.
Yeah.
In, like, that evening ceremony. And also to allow her servants to walk around freely, which gives us that...
which is great.
Yeah.
The Doctor loves a snoop. Let him snoop.
Yeah, exactly. It has that parameter of, okay, it's not going to be a bottle episode. They're going to be walking around.
Yeah, which is really great. Yeah. But if that doesn't last very long, because almost immediately, Ian is, like, picked out by the two of them as, like, this guy could really be the leader.
And
they talk about him as if, well, maybe he could start commanding our armies.
Yeah, he's like the warrior favoured by the gods, and he is meant to command their armies. And,
I mean, they're completely right. Ian should be leading an army. as we'll see later in this episode, Ian, like, he is the man. But we'll get there.
But this whole scene is so hilarious because the Doc tries to sort of brush the matter aside.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, no, don't worry about it, it's fine. But Ian, really not needing to go along, just kind of goes along with Max Factor, which is another name I've given to Lipstick, by the way.
Ian's reaction to everything is, oh, okay.
Yeah, all right, yeah, sure, I'll lead your armies. Yeah, that's fine.
But, what, I must fight this Ixter guy?
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Cut to Ixter.
Wait, this really makes no sense, because Ian, the Doc now being allowed to walk around freely, he and Ian are meant to go and find a way back into the tomb while Susan stays around with Barb.
Yeah.
But, so Ian should not be going along with this. Why does he just go, sure, I'll lead your army, it's fine.
Well,
I am the chosen warrior.
I don't think he's really given much choice. He has to, I mean, as the Doctor was saying to Barbara, like, she has to pretend to be a goddess in the same way, I guess, Ian has to pretend to be the servant to the goddess.
Yeah.
So he needs to go along with, I'm brilliant at warrioring, you know.
Yeah.
I'll get right on that.
I've got another question for you, by the way.
Go on.
So Max Factor, he takes Ian to Ixter. The guy who was previously chosen,
rival to command the armies. Yeah.
But Max Factor, a.k.a. Maybelline, a.k.a. L'Oreal's Aztec of the Year, he must sort of know that they're not, that Ian's not really a warrior chosen by the gods. So why would he stir up trouble?
Why would he know at this point?
Does he actually believe that she is the goddess?
I think he does, actually.
You think so?
I think this guy, the way he's presented throughout, he's a cynical guy. He only cares what people are saying and what people believe to be the truth for his own selfish ends.
Yeah.
So at the moment, these people who have turned up, the troop, haven't done anything to cause him any harm, and, like, the whole goddess story's working for him. So he's happy to go along with it at this point, I'd say.
Okay, all right.
Like, as soon as anybody starts causing trouble, that's when he's like, no, she's not a goddess, she's false.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the way I see him. He's a completely cynical man.
All right, thank you very much for clarifying that, Flap Flap.
No problem. Anytime.
Anyway, so he takes him to see Ixter, who is, like, the Aztec He-Man.
Mm-hmm.
He is hunk number one in Aztec country.
Do you know what?
In Mexico.
But do you know what? He's not that great.
No, but he is very hunky.
Well, he looks as though he would be, but he's actually... The first time you see him, he's, like, swinging a club wildly in the air. He looks like he's escaped from a mental asylum.
Oh, he's such a weirdo.
And he has no thoughts of his own. He's given all of his thoughts by Maybelline. Like, he seems like a borderline autistic, like...
I don't reckon that at all.
No?
No, I think he's actually quite independent in a way, but he knows that Max Factor is his only way to, like, power and influence.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, you've seen it very differently to me. I mean, I kind of think he's a puppet in Max Factor's game.
Oh, because he's not quite as clever as Max Factor, he clearly becomes a puppet.
Yeah.
But I don't think that he is a puppet in and of it himself. I mean, he takes some initiative on a few occasions trying to kill Ian and whatever.
We'll get to that.
But we're not there yet.
Suffice it to say, Ixter's a bit of a mental case, and he has to
demonstrate his...
Ian has to prove to Ixter and to Max Factor guy.
Yeah, but before he does that, I know what you're going to say, but before, and please feel free to do it. I'm not going to take that away from you. But before that, Ixton needs to demonstrate his fighting abilities, his warrior prowess, by reenacting one of the scenes from The Cave of Skulls.
Yeah,
it is. It's such a terrible fight scene.
Ends up destroying a shield or something. Yeah. Like something really not that impressive. And everybody's like, whoa.
I thought it was a styrofoam piece of
It probably was, but I think it was meant to be a shield.
Mm. Okay, yeah, sure.
But it was a completely pointless demonstration of power. I mean, I think anybody could kill an inanimate shield.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Anyway,
he's not very pleased with this change of command.
No, he's not very pleased. And he wants to kill Ian.
Mm.
Like, essentially, he doesn't like having a rival. He tells Ian, I'm going to kill you. Like, if you're going to be my rival, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the meantime...
Heavy.
Yeah. In the meantime, Ortlok has taken Doc to the garden, which is, where all the... People who, when they retire, after a lifetime of service, they retire to this garden.
Yeah, which is a lovely concept.
Such a nice concept.
And the Doctor's voice immediately goes up about 3 octaves,
I would say so.
Yeah, he stops being the bastard we all know him to be, and actually...
I love this, by the way.
It's beautiful. He has a little grin on his face, a little bit of wind in his hair, and, he's talking like this.
God, this is so nice!
And he is presented this woman, Kamika?
Kameka or Kaneka, I don't know.
Yeah, something along those lines.
Yeah.
But the Doctor...
Whom Ortlok, by the way, describes to the Doctor as a companion of wit and interest.
Yeah.
I love that.
And a learned woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I love the use of companion. Because Ortlok describes her as a fantastic companion, and she later on describes the Doctor as a fantastic companion.
And we are quickly told that she's available.
Yeah. Oh, totally. She is on the market.
She's totally on the market.
Ortlok basically goes, so this is Kameka. She's a companion of wit and interest. She likes long strolls along the beach. She's clearly got a green thumb. She's available.
But you know what? He's quite right. Kameka is lovely.
She's a wonderful woman.
And the Doctor immediately falls in love. And why not? Why not?
Mm.
Other than the fact that the Doctor doesn't really have seemed to have had the capacity for love thus far. But this woman wins him over.
Totally.
And it's great. It's lovely. It's really fluffy. He's got a really fluffy voice on.
Yeah. The only thing missing from these scenes are basically soft focus shots. They should have a soft focus shot of Kamika. With that Star Trek jingle in the background, it's like...
But she's
this is a beautiful woman, basically.
But she is a pretty older lady. She's a lot prettier than William Hartnell, anyway.
Does she have kids?
No, she doesn't have kids.
No, she's a MILF, nonetheless. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Okay, so she then explains to him that the guy who built the temple, he's passed away.
Yeah.
But his son, who is a warrior, still lives, and she is willing to arrange a meeting between the Doctor and this warrior guy.
And of course the Doctor is very interested in knowing the layout of the tomb.
Yeah.
Because obviously that's where the TARDIS is being kept, mostly. But also, he's an interested guy.
Yeah.
He loves construction. They were all very interested in the Keys of Marinus, actually. Remember the building in the Keys of Marinus? They said it had Aztec design, elements of Aztec design.
Yeah.
And now we've moved in to actual Aztec
design.
Yeah, I believe is it's a beautiful symmetry.
That's a very nice point. I had not thought about that. Anyway, then Ian arrives wearing this man-sized lizard pajama.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh my god, check this out. I made the same note as you did.
Oh my god.
16 minutes into episode 1, Doc shits over lines. Sound bites.
This dear lady has promised me to arrange a meeting between me, myself, and the son of the man who built the temple.
So good.
Enjoyable. So the Doctor comes in wearing this mad Aztec dress. He's dressed up as a warrior. And tells
Ian.
And he comes in and tells the Doctor that he's been told he has to assist in a human sacrifice.
Yeah.
And the Doctor is you absolutely must. To save our bacon, you must sacrifice this person.
Yeah.
Which sounds cold at the time. I actually made notes that the Doctor was being a bit of an arse here. But it turns out he's quite right.
I don't think it's cold at all.
Viewed in the historical context of when it actually happens, the sacrificial person kind of wants to be sacrificed. And it is a
And even if he
thing.
Doesn't want to be sacrificed, he was sacrificed, so it's clearly part of human history, so let's not mess with it.
Yeah, that part's true. But it seemed very uncompassionate at the time, but actually I can see where the Doctor's coming from, the way it played out. Turns out the Doctor is actually right on this.
I think the saving of the bacon, however, is a larger factor here. I think he doesn't want him to somehow go against Aztec tradition, because that would make them, put them in a much weaker position.
Yeah, it would make them seem suspicious. They wouldn't believe that Barb was a goddess. But also, like, he is playing into historical context.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's fine. Like, I was going to say, what a heartless bastard, but no, I don't think so.
Yeah, totally.
Anyway,
cut to Susan and Barb, and they're talking about the beauty and horror developing hand in hand. Like, they're having this little moment where Susan is trying on the Yataxa bonnet, and they're like, oh, this is so pretty, and we got jewelry and fine silk or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's also such a cruel society, and there's a little bit of philosophizing about that, at which point the Doctor arrives.
Oh, yeah, I remember this point. And he comes in and he tells Barb, the same as he told Ian, you must not interfere. Barb ain't having any of it. Like, she's a bit of an old softie, and tells him that she absolutely cannot. And then makes a really interesting leap of logic. She says that if she can make the Aztecs good, i.e. stop them doing human sacrifice, when Cortez comes, everything will be fine, everybody be cool with each other.
How, Bob? Explain this to us.
Well, like, as I said right at the beginning of the episode, Cortez is presented as, like, this rational person who comes over, sees how, like, barbaric the Aztecs are, and takes them out for the good of mankind. That's not my understanding of Cortez.
No. Like... he turned up to steal and pillage
gold.
And
after gold. I mean,
precisely, and just slay anyone in his way.
Yeah, and just like pile up skulls for some reason.
Yeah. But it's so weird. One of her lines is, "This is the beginning of the end of the sun god," as though the sun god were the cause of Cortez's evil.
Well, because there is an old Aztec prophecy that a man will come, like, and it describes Cortez somehow. A man will come and destroy Aztec civilization. Yeah.
Have you been Wikipediaing again?
No. Like, this is memory from actually a primary school lesson I had when I was about 8 or 9 years old, which is the last tutoring I ever got about Aztecs. So I was like 8 or 9, year 4 or 5. But yeah, that's where I remember Tenochtitlan from. But yeah, there was an Aztec prophecy that a man, they describe him somehow like a man with golden hair or something. It describes Cortez.
Okay.
Will come and destroy the Aztec civilization.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what she's bought into.
Maybe. Maybe it's like a reference, but like, I didn't pick it up that well.
Anyway, the next tiny little exchange between the Doc and Bob is quite fascinating, because he says, you can't rewrite history, not one line. Mm. Trust me, I've tried. Like, it doesn't work. Believe me, please. Believe me.
But,
so you've tried to mess up history and you fail, but clearly you have.
That kind of fits into later Doctor Who. We're not told by we're told by Matt Smith, time can be rewritten. Like, it's a surprise to him, right?
Yeah.
So before that, it was thought, you know, there were these fixed points in time that couldn't be moved, that couldn't be changed.
Yeah.
And the Doctor's totally bought into that, and presumably he's tried and failed to change things. And
that's true. And
it's only in Matt Smith era where we're told, time can be rewritten.
Yeah.
So it kind of fits in that the Doctor does think that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. He goes, please, believe me, Barbara. And she then says, not Barbara, Yataxa. She now buys into her own myth and legend.
So cut to the ceremony, the sacrifice, whatever.
Yeah.
They're about to sacrifice this guy, and Barb steps in.
I got to correct you on that one. Because I made a note here to ask you about it.
Okay.
Because I definitely got the impression that sacrifice was to take place later on that evening. And it is very much like daylight outside.
Okay.
But immediately after the not Barbara attacks, I think, we don't cut anywhere. They step out of that room, and the sacrifice is about to happen.
I got the impression it was a cut, but I might be wrong. I don't know.
Anyway, so there's this topless dude strapped to the sacrifice bonnet, and he's about to get killed.
Yeah, that's right. They're literally about to stab him. Barb steps in and goes, no, I'm your taxer, don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She doesn't just step in, Susan steps in as well.
Yeah.
Like, she runs in screaming, like, oh, don't do this, which is then going to actually factor into the storyline.
Yeah.
But, Anyway.
But the guy's really upset. The guy who's about to be killed, he's really upset. He's been denied his honour by this bitch, and he throws himself off the building.
Yeah, because Mr. Maybelline basically just tells him, like, yeah, don't worry about it. Like,
yeah, just die, and it'll prove to everyone. And actually, he jumps off, and it immediately starts raining.
Yeah.
Which I think is good proof that they were right about human sacrifice. Okay, so you can tell in the sky maybe, like, rain's coming, and maybe they knew. Mm. But, like, to the second? Like, he jumped... rain came.
Yeah.
Like, I think that is definite proof, and I can believe that everybody bought into it.
Well, either, yeah. Well, it, oh, totally why everyone bought into it, but it could also be sort of a comment on how Aztec civilization was very, very informed about meteorological conditions.
Like, incredibly so.
They could pinpoint
to
rain.
To the second.
To the second.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, so he dies, it rains.
He out Michael Fish. They actually knew exactly when it was going to rain.
Yeah. And then Lipstick basically demands that Susan have knowledge beaten into her for transgressing their rules.
Yeah, in terms of Orlok turns up and says, well, why don't we just send her to school? So that's what they do. And
yeah.
Barb's happy with that, and it's, you know, it's fine.
Exactly, and episode one is concluded with, Susan being taken away and the Lorian...
And Maybelline doubting whether Barb is a goddess.
Yeah, he in fact calls her a false god.
Yeah, and wants to kill her.
Yeah. Totally.
Dum, 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 and a new episode.
It's not so much a doom to doom to doodle doom as it is, I believe I said this earlier, every little scene in this entire story arc is intercut with what sounds like an iPhone message arriving. Like, so anyway.
Do you want a soundbite of that?
Soundbite.
Total iPhone message.
Total iPhone message.
Okay, episode two.
The Warriors of Death.
Fantastic.
Yeah, putting warriors of mild injury to shame since 1963.
Yeah. So we open up. The Doctor is pissed. Like, Barbara has completely fucked everyone's shit up. Like, stupid, foul woman. Like,
you, that's right. Oh, I didn't think, she says. And he's like, that's right, you didn't think.
Yeah. But the Doctor's really pissed about it. And why not?
Yeah, and she does sort of resign to his point of view, just for a moment anyway. And the Doctor suggests putting Max Factor and Orlok against each other.
Yeah, that's their only way out of it. Because Orlok still believes she's a real goddess. But Max Factor's, like, totally not buying it.
Yeah.
And that's why he's saying, we got to get Orlok on our side.
Yeah.
Like, keep him believing whatever you do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he then says that he's met someone who can tell them about the temple, this Aztec lady.
Yeah.
And is called, I think, by Barbara, you're an old rogue. When he says, like, an Aztec lady, he's like, oh, you old rogue.
He totally is.
Yeah.
Leads her up a blind alley.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Next scene, we cut to Ian. Ian with Ixter. Are you there?
There's a scene before then, Clipoxel,
okay,
what's his name? Mr. Maybelline.
Okay.
He's, like, quizzing her on Aztec trivia.
Oh, yeah. And asks her how many heavens there are. She gets it right.
Exactly.
And then says, name them. And she's like, I'll only answer to the high priest of knowledge.
Yeah. Actually, I've got another point here to ask you. Doesn't that kind of mean that anyone could feign divinity there? Because all the questions that she...
Of course it does.
Every question that he asks her, he knows the answer to. And presumably every learned person or everyone who is mildly religious will know the answers to these questions themselves. So why couldn't anyone just feign divinity?
Well, good point. And I guess that's why they're always so suspicious of people saying they're divine.
Yeah.
As they should.
Well, they're not really suspicious. She's wearing the thing that she stole from the tomb. It doesn't matter. Anyway, so cut to Ian having the time of his life.
Yeah. Well, not really having the time. Like, he's forced to fight Ixter.
He's not really forced to do anything. He's just like, yeah, sure.
No, it's just like, will you fight him? Ixter's like, oh, I could beat you up. I could totally punch you up here. And, like, Ian's like, really, could you? And Ixter starts doing stuff, and Ian's like, I could beat you with my thumb.
Yeah. Oh, this is so good.
And then he does. Please describe.
He basically performs the Vulcan nerve pinch.
Oh, it's amazing.
grip? What
takes,
the fuck?
Takes him out.
Yeah. The neck pinch is what it is. The Vulcan neck pinch.
Ian's just like, bend over there. Pick up your club. Pick up your club. See what happens. Go
Vulcan
on,
neck pinch.
And he's out.
He's out, like, in a second. And then
okay,
two
where
potentates.
The hell did Ian learn that?
He watched Star Trek and just learned. He's got a time machine. He probably travelled like approximately 10 years forward in time, watched Star Trek, and then came back to perform that on Ixta. Anyway, so these two potentates arrive and are essentially manipulated by L'Oreal to, he at first sort of...
One of them's the perfect victim, right? the perfect victim turns up.
Yeah, oh yeah, you're right. It's the perfect victim and some dude who's another priest of knowledge.
Yeah.
They wish to grant like the fallen X to the command, but he's sort of... No, wait.
I think essentially they just come in and bad priest, like Maybelline guy, wants to set up another fight.
Yeah, wait, hang on. Interpret my notes correctly. If I'm not mistaken, like they want to grant the fallen Ixter, quote unquote, the command, but he refuses because he's too proud. He doesn't want to be the fallen Ixter.
Yeah, he wants to actually defeat.
Exactly. And Mr. Maybelline says, "Yeah, so just challenge Ian."
Ian. You must challenge Ian. Yeah, and the priest, the bad priest, wants Ian dead.
Yeah. So then, text message transition to the doc and Kamiko, whatever, in the garden.
Yeah, absolutely. Like lapping each other up.
Yeah. So, and she shows him this leaf, which has sleep-inducing properties. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's going to factor in. They're being mega flirty. It's lovely.
Well, the Doctor loves to roofie people, so obviously it's giving him ideas.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I've got like something I can send people to sleep with and then do stuff to them? Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he's all about.
And she then goes to set up the meeting for that evening, as in with the warrior son.
Yeah, who we don't know who that is yet.
Not yet.
It will become...
Yeah, it's Ixter.
Obvious.
Yeah. Alright, so...
And then we get a little scene with Barb and Maybelline guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Where he basically tells her he believes her divinity to be under dispute.
Yeah.
Because it's under dispute, she's not allowed to see the rest of the tube. The troop. tube. Makes it illegal for the rest of the troop to see her.
Yeah, exactly.
Be in violation of law because she's under dispute.
Yeah, exactly. And then Kamiko goes to see Ixter.
Yeah. So it turns out Ixter is the son of the Master Builder.
Yeah.
He's the person we've been talking about.
This whole scene makes no sense to me, by the way.
Why?
Because when she arrives, he says that he called for her. In fact, she says he called for her because he wants her advice on magic, which is the Vulcan neck pinch. God, we are literally like Obama going, oh, it's the Jedi mind meld. Anyway, but like,
been called the Jedi mind meld, it would have been better. Obama knows. Anyway,
so he called her to be advised on the use of magic, but she went to him to ask him to meet with the Doctor. It's really weird.
Okay, well, you know, happy coincidence.
Yeah, and she essentially also, like, it does actually work out really well, because she's like, oh, I have no idea about magic, but I know this dude who does.
Yeah.
This old guy. You should meet him.
And he makes it plain to her, like, keep me completely anonymous. Like, I want to meet with him, but don't tell him who I am.
Exactly.
Yeah, so he's up to some bad stuff.
Yeah. Cut to Susan at the Temple of Knowledge reciting, like, the rather restrictive rules of being a woman to Ortlok, who, by the way, is a man.
Yeah. Well, and again, like, Susan was in a similar situation before, wasn't she?
Yeah. This is Ping Cho all over again, by the way.
Where she's being told, what, you want to marry somebody you like? she's being told, like, when a man enters a room, like, you must stare at him and not say anything. Unless he wants to be your husband, then you must stare at him.
Unless it's your future husband. Yeah. Oh, how will I know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, well, I mean, you'll be told.
Yeah.
And I find this quite upsetting because she's so upset by this. She's like, what? I refuse to marry anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But literally 2 episodes of Who Back When ago, she had no problem accepting Ping Cho having to marry someone else until she found out that he was old and manky.
That old manky dude.
Yeah.
But the only time it's presented to her as an actual working case scenario is that they're asking her to marry a guy who's going to be killed in 2 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is kind of hot, but he's going to die in 2 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We haven't gotten to that yet. She'll meet her future husband in a little bit. Yeah, spoiler alert, she's going to get married or whatever. But yeah, so Tamila, another priest of knowledge, appears, and they object to the whole marriage thing, whatever, it's terrible. And then Ixter meets the Doc.
Yeah.
That's the next one. He meets him in disguise. Like, he's wearing his warrior outfit.
Yeah, and the Doctor notices nothing.
Even though this guy looks like a man-sized Garfield, he's got, like, a cat head type thing.
But the Doctor, like, obviously, because he's found out about this plant from Kamiko, mentions to Ixtar, like, he's exchanging this information. I've got this potion that can send people to sleep.
Well, he doesn't say yeah, but he's like, oh, if you give me the thing, come back later on, if, and I'll have found a way.
Yeah, basically, give me the drawings showing me how to get into the temple, and I will give you this poison that will paralyze people.
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's a fair deal.
Because Ixtar has told the doc that he has, like, a fight scheduled for later on that evening, but he hasn't said with whom.
Which we know, as the audience, is with Ian. But,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yarn.
But the doctor doesn't know this. Exactly. So he's just exchanging a bit of poison for some information.
Exactly.
As far as he knows.
And then Ixtar goes to challenge Yarn, and Max Factor tells him to let Yarn die.
Yeah, that's right.
Pretty cool.
So Ixtar has the poison, and no, sorry.
Not yet. Next up is Barb and Ortlok talking about the future of Aztec society.
Yeah.
And basically she starts kind of feeding him a little bit of information in terms of, like, oh, sacrifice is not necessary, gods are not the be-all and end-all of Aztec civilization.
Yeah.
And he kind of buys it. He doesn't really do anything, but he kind of buys it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the next thing we see is the doctor coming in to see Barb, which is completely illegal. Like, we know it's completely wrong. He's not allowed to see Barb because of the directive.
Yeah, en route to Barb, he does actually meet Ixtar and give him the poison.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, sorry. That's entirely my bad.
Yeah, so Ixtar has the poison. The doctor goes to see Barb. He's not allowed in there. But after talking for about 5 seconds with Barb, he realised that it is Ixtar that he's given the poison to and that he's going to fight Ian later.
Yeah. And then when he leaves the room, he's arrested by Max Factor's henchmen because, no one was allowed to see Yataxa.
Yeah.
And this is another, like, cul-de-sac. This is a total Harry Potter move because Ortlok basically tells Barb, the doc, he totally transgressed the law, so he must be punished and incarcerated.
Yeah.
And she says, yeah, but he didn't know. So Ortlok goes, oh, all right then.
Yeah, Ortlok's just like, yeah, I can't allow anybody to be punished. Like, it's kind of like saying, like, you get caught drink driving. And she's like, well, what's wrong with alcohol?
Yeah.
Like, and the police go, you didn't know. God. Well, at least now you know.
Yeah, exactly. So then, fight.
Fight.
Oh, this is fantastic.
And what a fight.
Yeah.
It's like a man grudge match between Ixtar and Ian.
Yeah, it is Aztec He-Man versus Sweaterman.
But Ian's winning the fight. He's actually battering Ixtar.
Oh, totally, until Ixtar produces the poison.
Ixtar scratches him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and administers the poison. At which point the doctor comes in and says, you've been poisoned.
Yeah, there are a lot of similarities between this fight and the cat fight between Superman and Nuclear Man in Superman 4.
People laugh about Superman 4 and gets ripped on all the time. I actually really enjoyed that.
It's a terrible movie. I say that not having seen it.
I loved it. Anyway, we're not reviewing Superman 4.
Yeah. The doc tries but fails to stop the fights. Yarn slowly but surely gets weakened and loses.
He's still battering Ixtar, even though he's half conscious.
Yeah.
It's only when he actually passes out that he loses. He's actually battering Ixtar with half strength. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then Max Factor calls that Yataxa is a false god. It doesn't matter that she forbids Ian to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
And Blammo, enter Barb Wire, which I think is a quite appropriate name to give her from now on, because she is badass.
She takes on the role wonderfully of goddess.
Oh, no, she is.
Yeah, she actually takes up the reins, takes over the situation.
I think we're probably going to get into this in the review section of the podcast.
She's actually a hero of this episode.
Oh, yeah. Totally. We're probably going to comment on this later on when we give our little mini reviews. But I think almost one of the best things about this whole story arc is that Barbara finally gets to act.
Yeah.
Like, she is this female character of authority who gets to influence the plot and influence characters.
Well, she has done well before. In The Keys of Marinus, she did quite well. She was the only one. I know it wasn't something she did, it just happened to be that way. But she did see through the reality that was being created around
her. That is true.
And she did try to alert them, and that did ultimately save everyone.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
That way. Like, I'm coming around to Barb. I like Barb.
Yeah, I like Barb too.
I like her.
Yeah, despite the haircut. So
no, because of that.
Because of the haircut. Is this person who looks like she's been running diagonally through some sort of wind tunnel. Anyway, so...
But she takes up the reins, and she actually manages to convince everyone not to kill Ian.
Well, the episode closes with Max Factor going, well, if you want him to live, then why don't you save him?
Yeah, okay, you're right.
Cut to episode 3.
Episode 3.
The Bride of Sacrifice.
Yeah, Barb takes over the situation.
She grabs a ship.
She threatens to kill Clataxel. That's Max Factor's real name. She threatens to kill Clataxel by holding something to his neck.
Yeah, she wants to give him a Colombian necktie.
So there you go.
Mexican necktie, probably more appropriate. Yeah, exactly. And he then obviously, wanting to save his own ass, says, yeah, no, let him go.
Mm-hmm.
Jan is saved. Aztec, Hercules, and Max Factor get to chatting.
Yeah, and they're conspiring.
Basically. Yeah, and Lipstick also at this point knows that it wasn't magic, but merely like the juice of the plant, as he says.
Yeah, but Ixter's like, I kind of gain a little bit of respect back for him, because he's actually quite satisfied now that he's beaten Ian.
Yeah.
He's genuinely quite happy. He didn't have to kill him. And he actually says this to Ian later in the episode. He's like, oh, do you know what? Like, we can be friends now.
Well,
I did batter you in public. It's fine.
When he says that, he also adds, like, there's a slight addendum. You're going to die very soon. I am actually going to kill you. So we can be friends for the short amount of time that you're still around.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we're going to get to that later on. So anyway, what's his face? Lipstick. He realizes it was just the juice of the plant and says that Talina or Toledo or whatever, the other...
Toledo.
will know more. Because he's like a horticulturalist or something.
Right.
Anyway, iPhone transition to Ortlok and barbed wire. And he's kind of disappointed that she didn't use magic to, like, spirit Ian away to safety.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she makes... Okay, so she then makes a case against L'Oreal's Aztec Man of the Year, saying, like, oh, he's just an evil drag queen who must be destroyed, while you are this good guy, a priest of knowledge.
Yeah, and she says that she has proof. So she knows, like, presumably from her historical knowledge, that there's going to be an eclipse in 3 days' time.
Yeah.
Which is amazingly, like, good memory.
Well, I don't know if she knows that. He tells everyone knows that there's going to be an eclipse.
There's going to be an eclipse. But, and she's basically saying, well, don't do a blood sacrifice and see if the sun comes back.
Yeah,
it blatantly
and, like,
will.
You, as the priest of knowledge, you know that the sun will appear again.
Like, yeah, he's not so sure, but, like, he's sort of agreeing to try it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess so. Apparently in this culture you need to go to school to realise that the sun will rise. Anyway, so then we get this quick scene with the Doc and Max Factor in the garden.
Yeah, and the Doctor tries to get Clataxel to open the tomb, promising that he'll give him proof that Barb isn't divine.
Yeah, or like that he'll see the truth for himself regardless.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he kind of implies that if you open up the tomb, you'll see the evidence as to why she's not divine.
Oh, yeah, okay, no, fair enough. That's a good point.
So he's striking a fair enough bargain again. Yeah. The Doc's doing well.
Yeah, totally. Cut to Ian waking up. Ian wakes up, and then what I've written in my notes is, screw you, every modern movie with a scene where we unblur an image of a maniac with a knife. Because Doctor Who did this before all of y'all. I mean, because... Ian wakes up, and we've got this blurry image of He-Man, Aztec, Hercules, Ixter, whatever.
Right.
Like, sharpening a knife and just going like, I could poke your eyes out with this. Don't run with scissors.
Yeah, and this is the point at which Ixter starts talking to Ian.
Like, yeah.
In his laughing, menacing way, going, oh, no, we're all right now.
Yeah, like, we can be kind of chummy until I kill you.
I'm clearly better than you, but, you know. Like,
yeah.
You're going to die soon. Anyway.
I love this bit,
like,
by the way, because Ian,
does it matter?
Like, Ian puts on his best Clint Eastwood performance ever.
Ian,
so cool.
He's completely stoic throughout. Like, it doesn't matter if he's poisoned, beaten, like, told that he's going to die, nothing. It's just absolutely deadpan.
He's fantastically
absolutely
blessed.
Ready for a fight at all times.
Yeah. Best line, by the
like
way, is when Mr. Maybelline turns up and Ian goes, oh, don't tell me you're my friend now, too.
Yeah.
I love
that.
It's super Clint Eastwood.
He just sees through everything. You know, he's just badass.
Yeah. So then Aztec Hunk number one tells Mr. Maybelline that he lied about having the drawings, because apparently he doesn't.
Yeah, there's no such thing as the drawings. And Clataxel reveals that he wants to poison Barb at that point to test whether she's divine.
Yeah, and Tanila has turned up.
He calls it a test, but he knows she's not divine and wants to poison her.
Yeah, exactly. Tanila kind of objects at first. He was like, oh, you can't kill the gods, that's blasphemous. And he's like, but the thing is, you can't kill the gods.
Yeah, exactly, they're immortal.
Yeah, exactly. So if she does die, then that's proof of her being human. But if she survives, then that's you being the one person who proved her divinity.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous, by the way. It's like like the witch-proof things, like, let's drown the woman, and if she survives, she's a witch, but if she dies, fuck it, it's not murder.
But, logically, like, well, they don't care about murder, they just care whether she's divine, and logically, I think it's a sound argument.
Yeah.
If there were such a thing as witches, and it were true that they didn't float, like, you know, precisely. Like, the problem there with the witch finders wasn't the logic of the test. It was the fact there was no such thing as witches. That was why it fell down. If there was such a thing as gods, this would be a fair test. Like, I can completely believe what he said. No, it's fine.
Right, anyway. So then iPhone transitioned back to the garden.
Yeah.
Ortlok and Kaneka.
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah, you're right.
Go for it.
No, you go.
All right, so Kaneka and Ortlok, they're talking about the doctor.
Yeah.
Because, like, he sees that she's super happy. He's like, oh, so why are you happy?
And yeah, she kind of spring in your step there.
Yeah, she looks over at Doc and goes, like, to Ortlok, like, this guy is hung like a horse. Really, really looking forward to getting into his TARDIS, if you know what I mean.
She just says she's in love with him.
Yeah, okay, fine.
And the doctor then comes over and suggests they drink some cocoa together.
Yeah, she's carrying these cocoa beans, and when they're first, everything here is super obvious. I'm assuming that you made, either you made the same notes I did, or you made the same assumption I made.
Cocoa is a reference to sex.
Like, yeah. That there are, she's saying, like, oh, cocoa beans. Yeah. We get, like, okay, so these are some sort of love potion?
Yeah, they're love potions.
Yeah.
But they're not actually love potion, but, no. Like, obviously chocolate does release, like, love enzymes.
Sure.
So you can believe why.
Yeah. But then also, the second you realise that those two are going to drink cocoa, it is so obvious that they're going to get married.
It's really
like
hot.
It is. This must mean something else.
Yeah, but the doctor's perfectly happy. Like, he's playing along with the whole I'm in love with you thing and seems to genuinely believe it.
I think he's in love with her.
Until she says, oh, we've had cocoa.
Oh, no, we get to that later.
Okay.
First, like, she meets up with the doc, as in Ortlok fucks off. Yeah. She goes up to the doc and gives him this. He asks about this token on the wall, mm-hmm. And she goes, "Oh, that's the symbol of your taxa."
Yeah,
which is kind of weird. Like, I wonder if that'll feature later on.
Yeah.
And B, if he is supposedly the elder adjutant of the god Yataxa, wouldn't he know what Yataxa's symbol looks like?
Yeah,
she's not suspicious at all that he doesn't know this. But anyway,
but she's head over heels. She's willing to. She's willing to overlook a few things.
Yeah. Anyway, so we learned that these cocoa beans, they're not just cocoa beans, they're also their currency. So they are, they're basically money, right?
Mm.
And he goes, of course I know about the ritual of drinking cocoa. Here, let me take some of your money, and this pissed me off, and I will prepare a drink for us. Like, he's being this cheeky bugger who basically just takes her money.
Yeah, but she's perfectly happy for him to do so, because it's not just money. It's also a symbol of love. It's also a love potion. It's lovely.
Yeah, I think it... I completely agree with you, but I think it would have been slightly more romantic if he had produced cocoa beans of his own.
Yeah.
This is a little bit like if...
Stealing a wedding ring off your bride-to-be and going, here you go, here's a wedding ring.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly the example I was going to give you. But, okay, so, fine. They are to drink this currency.
Yeah.
And... I was thinking, are they technically married now? That is literally the nod I made.
Yeah, well,
and it is going
to
happen.
That's what she seems to think. Well, she seems to think that after they've drunk the cocoa, they are technically engaged to be married. They're not actually married. They are engaged to be married. And the doctor is quite surprised by this. Despite saying he knew all of the, you know, historical significance of the cocoa bean, he clearly didn't, because he looked very surprised when she said, hey, we're going to be married now.
He's like, what? This is him waking up in Las Vegas in Act 2 of The Hangover, realizing that he's married some priest/stripper. Anyway.
Anyway.
So, cut to the temple. Jan comes to warn Bob.
Yes.
And kind of in the process, pretty much tells her out of the blue that, like, her entire way of thinking was just folly. Mm-hmm. And he persuades her of this as well. Like, she understands that, oh shit, she made a boo-boo. Like, this was not cool.
Yeah.
At which point, drink people, Max Factor and Tanila arrive.
Yeah.
And Jan hides.
And it is the most transparent attempt to, like, murder someone that could possibly ever be known. So, Klataxa has been nothing but horrible and suspicious and with murderous intent towards Barbara.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden just comes in the room and goes, oh, do you know what? Like,
let's be friends.
We should really be friends. Like, I believe you're a goddess now. Hey, let's have a drink.
Yeah. In fact, I've actually brought one cup and here it's yours.
Yeah, like, I'm such a good guy and I love you so much. I don't want to drink it. Why don't you have some? Like, and then she completely falls for it. She is
about to drink it, but Jan, fortunately, is in the background
waving his arms, going, are you fucking insane? Like, how dumb are you?
He is making gestures with the same intensity that you would wave a helicopter down.
Yeah. Just after a nuclear holocaust. Yeah.
She then goes, you know what? That's fine. Why don't you drink it first? He refuses.
Yeah, and then it's obvious it's poison.
She breaks the cup, goes, oh, you fuckers! And Tonila just kind of runs away.
But any respect anybody might have had for Barbara was lost in that little episode.
Yeah, it is really weird, though, because she, in the same scene, confesses to Mr. Maybelline that she's not your taxa. But she also says, this is where she's barbed wire, by the way, because she says, I'm not your taxa.
Barbed wire.
She is barbed wire. She confesses, I'm not your taxa, but you know what? Mess with me. Everyone else thinks I'm your taxa. I will fuck you up so royally.
She threatens to kill him. Just outright kill him.
I will have you strapped to the sacrifice bonnet before your scrotum has had time to pull back into your measly little lipstick body.
I don't know, what stick she's beating him with there.
No, but he is just as aware.
But why is he so afraid of her? I'm not your taxa, but I'm gonna fuck your shit up.
Yeah, he's afraid because he knows that everyone else thinks that she's your taxa, and by that token, if she told like
all the power against, I guess so. Yeah,
just like he's been using his power and influence to mess up everyone else's life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So, cut back to the garden.
Yeah, and the doctor and, what's her name again?
Kamika,
or whatever. They're drinking the cocoa, and she actually reveals to him, we're like married now.
Yeah.
Or we're about to get married. And he completely just leads her on. He's just like, yeah.
It cuts right off after that. I think.
But he says yes. Like, he agrees.
No, he says yes. Okay. It's a two-parter because she says, you have declared your love for me.
Yeah.
And he nods.
He completely agrees to that.
Totally agrees. I don't think he's lying, by the way. I think he is head over heels with this Kanika.
Yeah, but he's not planning to stay, is he?
No, exactly.
He's still desperate to get into the temple so he can fuck off in his TARDIS.
Oh, totally. But she then immediately follows that up with, and I accept your proposal. And he's like, huh?
Yeah. But doesn't dispute it. Definitely doesn't dispute it.
Well, we don't even have... No, he definitely doesn't dispute it, but we, immediately cut back to the temple again.
But he does lead her on. Maybe just because it's a bit awkward, or because he needs her for his own selfish ends. But one of the two. He doesn't tell her no.
That's true.
We're not married.
That's true.
Which I think's kind of off.
Cut back to the temple. Maybelline has now told... This is literally just a one-line thing.
Yeah.
But he tells Tonila that Bob's weakness is in her affection for her friends.
Yeah.
So basically, they're not going to find
her. And basically said that he's going to use Susan as the sticking point.
Yeah.
Because Susan's the weakest one, the easiest to get to. They've already got her in custody.
Yeah, they're not going to find a husband for her, basically.
Yeah. They know who the husband's going to be. They hatch a little plan, and it turns out it's the perfect victim. We talked about this earlier. The guy who's going to die in 3 days comes up to Susan. She's like,
did we say why, by the way?
Look of her.
Did we say why? There's going to be an eclipse?
Yeah, it's going to be an eclipse, and he's the sacrifice.
Yeah, they're going to sacrifice this dude in order to get the sun to come back afterwards. Anyway, if we said that before, ignore it.
But they set it up. He goes in, he sees Susan, and goes, I'd like a bit of that.
Yeah.
and everybody's standing there and goes, you're the perfect victim.
Dude, you realise she's a minor, right?
I actually don't know how old she's meant to be. 16? She meant to be 16?
I think she's meant to be 16, but she's clearly older than that.
Actress is clearly older. But I think Susan is meant to be 16.
Yeah, yeah.
Which makes it fine, just about.
Everything is relative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, back in 63, it was fine anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
everybody's standing around, including Good Priest. What's his name again? Ortlock.
Yeah.
He says, these are absolutely the rules. This guy's going to die for us in 3 days. He can have whatever he wants, and them's the rules. You have to marry him.
Exactly. And Susan, she totally refuses.
She just will not have it. So she's now in for a big punishment.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't know what that punishment is yet. And do we ever find out?
She's going to have, she's going to get her ears pierced, basically.
Isn't that it?
I think so. With thorns, so fair enough.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, then back on the other soundstage in the garden, Kanika's giving the doc this piece of metal, or stone, possibly. And it's, something from Yataxa's tomb.
Yeah. That you really should know about.
Yeah. And she says Ixta's dad gave it to her shortly before he disappeared from the garden.
Yeah.
And this is the first we've ever heard of this. So the guy the architect behind the temple.
Yeah.
He fancied her.
Yeah.
Gave her this thing, Yataxa symbol thingamajiggy, token, as a token of his own, like, affection for her. And then suddenly disappeared without a trace.
Yeah.
And it is definitely set up like something...
Which you kind of think it must be something suspicious, like, either, like, it's, like, Ixtus murders his own father, or, like... Some sort of treachery was afoot.
Oh, really? My theory, like, my theory here, and I was proven wrong, by the way, but my theory was that when they find the way back into the temple, which I assumed was going to be a tunnel, they would find his dead corpse in that tunnel. Like that.
Or, it actually occurred to me, they might find him alive, stuck inside the temple, in like a little secret chamber.
Yeah.
Like, or something definitely. Like that. And, you know, that's how it would be left. He meets up with, what's her name? Kataxa,
what?
The woman.
Kanika.
Yeah, so he meets up with Kanika, their love is rekindled, and it's all fine.
Mm.
But no, none of that happens. Like, we're told absolutely nothing about this guy ever again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But she gives him this thing, and there are... Okay, I've written down another one of my theories here. Half of it actually was proven right. My theory number two is the Yataxa coin, or whatever it is, is a key that opens the token on the wall that in turn leads to the tomb. That was my theory.
Yeah,
half of that was
good
proven
theory.
Right. When she gives him the thing, he totally plays along. You must love this. He totally plays along with the whole proposal thing.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, she's like, oh, we must have a garden of our own.
And suits his own ends.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, no, we must have a house and a garden of our own, and it'll be lovely. We'll have such a nice life together.
Yeah, like, he does love her. But his
I think he does, yeah.
But his love for himself overrides his love for her.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a selfish being, but that's fine. That's great drama.
Yeah.
Anyway, we cut back to Barb, and she's really into this goddess role. Like, they're discussing laws. They're coming to her for solutions to questions. They present it as, like, we've got this problem. Basically, we've got this person, and they violated our laws.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what should we do to them?
Yeah, and, like, the transgressor's ears will be pierced by thorns, ridiculed in front of the people.
Yeah, and, like, we know, like, with the...
This is Maybelline and Tortellini, by the way, again, the same two people who came in to basically poison her ass.
Yeah.
Very, very recently.
Yeah, and they're now saying, yeah, you make the laws.
Yeah.
Nothing suspicious there.
Doesn't she even say, oh, you know what, Tortellini, whatever your name is, Toledo, Tolina, or Tortellini, Tortellini is called in my notes anyway. I forgive you.
I haven't even got a name for him.
I think she even tells him, I forgive you for attempting to murder me.
Right, okay.
I think she says that.
Yeah.
But
wise and benevolent leader.
Yeah, and she goes, yeah, sure, that transgressor's ears will be pierced, but I want all of my servants, including my handmaiden, to be present.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he's like, yeah, she'll be present. Oh, yeah. You know, in that kind of way, yeah, she's the victim. But, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, then anyway, so...
So we cut back to Kataxa and the doctor.
Yes.
Right? And they're discussing a secret entrance to the tomb that only Kataxa knows about.
Kanika.
Kanika.
No, not to the tomb. Does she know about the entrance?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, she tells him of it.
Well, she says that there must be one, but she doesn't know where it is.
Maybe. She does give him some information.
No, I don't think so.
Well, because soon we get to the tomb. Like, the doctor's found it. He's found this entrance.
Yeah, but first we get that lovely little bit where...
Oh, yeah, where...
he jokes with
Ian. Where the doctor's like, oh, I'm engaged now, and Ian's just cracking up. Like, oh, you've completely fucked this woman over.
Yeah,
like,
congratulations.
Oh, doctor, you're such a card.
Don't worry about breaking the heart of this poor woman.
Yeah. But I think she did give the doctor information, because immediately after that, we're taken to the tomb.
Yeah.
Like, the next scene is at the tomb, and it's the doctor trying to break in.
Yeah.
Ian turns up, and actually does manage to get the door open.
It's that huge token that the doctor asked Kanika about before.
Yeah, once again, Ian proving his strength, seemingly lifting, like, 2 tons of stone.
Yeah.
On his own.
Just like that.
Yeah, just like that. It's like it was styrofoam.
Yeah.
And then the doctor says, okay, let's go inside. And Ian's like, no, it's too dangerous. I alone can undertake this task. And goes in.
By the way, I mean, it is... Wait, hang on. I think we skipped a bit. Before we get to the garden, Barbara finds out that it is Susan who is the one to be reprimanded.
Right, yeah.
Ortlock tells her. And she's like, oh no, this is terrible. And then we see Ian, before getting to the garden to help the doctor, we see him waking up. And apparently, He spends his night sleeping on this thin rug on the stone floor, cuddled up next to Aztec He-Man. And he wakes up in the middle of the night, goes to the garden, Hunk number one, Aztec Hunk number one, wakes up and follows him, brandishing this knife.
Yes, but he doesn't catch up to him
immediately. But it is worth mentioning.
Yeah, it is worth mentioning because, okay, so Ian's gone inside the tomb. Doctor's waiting outside. What's his name? Ixter turns up.
Bingo.
And he finds the doctor waiting outside and says that the stone has to be put back because there's water. Water is going to funnel through that entrance.
Yeah, it's like this irrigation system type
thing. Like an irrigation system. So he closes it. The doctor doesn't immediately protest. But he says it has to be closed because the tunnel's going to fill up with water.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. Cut Ian. To Ian's like, oh shit, where's all this water coming from? Episode 4, The Day of Darkness.
I totally thought that he would find the other guy's skeleton in there,
yep.
by the way. I totally thought that.
Or find the other guy.
Yeah, okay, I didn't think so.
But I thought there was a chance of that, but anyway, it didn't materialise.
Anyway, so He-Man's outside smirking.
Yeah, and the doctor comes clean. He's like, do you know what, Ixter? Like... Ian is actually inside. Yeah. Like, come on, let's not let him die. And Ixter's like, haha, Doctor, you've completely fed into my plans. Haha, he's going to die. Yeah?
Yeah, totally.
But obviously, Ian's not going to die, because Ian's the man.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Ian finds a solution to every problem that is ever presented to him.
Yeah, which he will right now in the beginning of episode 4, The Day of Darkness.
Yeah, huh? I already did that.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, sorry.
It's fine. But Ian, being the man he is, obviously works the solution out.
I am paying attention, I promise.
Thanks. You're one of those people who waits to talk. You don't listen.
No, I'm sorry. I was consulting my notes to see if I was remembering this correctly.
Dude, I forgive you.
Okay, thank you.
So Ian, being the man that he is, finds a way out. Like, he transverses all these little locks and secret little chambers, like climb stuff, does some pulleys with ropes and stuff, and finds a way out.
Yeah.
And actually makes his way all the way back to Barb. Inside the tomb. He actually completely finds his way through.
Yeah, exactly. He's inside. It's another Harry Potter problem.
Yeah.
Because, like, the...
And then, in what I thought was a hilarious turn of events, the Doctor turned up. Like, about the same time as Ian.
Yeah.
It took the Doctor about as much time
to
as it took
back to, the
to head
as
back round, go in the front door, as it did to take Ian to climb right through the middle.
Yeah. Can I just say, the pacing of Ian struggling against the water and trying to get out of that little tunnel bit was fantastic.
Yeah,
it really was fantastic, and the cutting and the editing in that scene was super modern.
Yeah,
like, for lack of a better expression, like, it is very much like you would see.
Yeah, she's trying to see his thought process when he's getting the rope out and he's trying to, like, get to the top of the tomb entrance. Like,
but also, like,
they show you their
way of building tension in that scene. It's remarkably similar to how a corresponding scene in a modern movie, like, today, would be done.
Yeah,
really well
absolutely.
Done. Anyway, yeah, sorry, I cut you off there, go for it.
So anyway, the Doctor turns up in about the same time it takes Ian to transverse the Tomb of Death. And so they realise there's three of them together, they just need Susan. And now they'll all be together and they can go home. So Ian goes off alone to try and save Susan from where she's being held captive. Was that not right?
No, it is right. Sorry, that's totally right. Hang on, wait. Looking at my notes, there's another thing. We can double-check this, by the way.
Okay.
And ladies and gentlemen of Podcast Land, please double-check this for yourselves. I'm pretty sure that when he gets into the tomb, as in before he goes out and sees Barb and the doc, I'm pretty sure there's no TARDIS in there.
No, they're not in that part of the tomb yet.
It's the same tomb, dude.
Yeah, but isn't there, like, sub-chambers of said tomb?
No, like, the corpse is there and everything.
That's true.
It's the same corpse, it's the same door, he creates the pulley, just like you said, like, everything is there, but the TARDIS is not in there, like, they forgot to put the prop in.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
We can double-check it. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, leave a comment on the website if
you know.
Yeah. So, sorry, go for it.
Yeah, so Ian goes off alone to save Susan.
Susan. And Maybelline, in the meantime, orders Hunk number one to guard Susan.
Yes. Stop calling him Hunk number one. He's Ixter. Like, his name is said constantly. He's not Hunk number one.
He's Aztec Hunk. Fine. I will not call him Ixter.
Aztec Hunk number one's fine. You need to differentiate.
Really?
Yeah.
I just said that.
No, you said Hunk number one.
Yeah.
Aztec Hunk number
one. Pretty sure I corrected myself. Who's not paying attention now?
Whatever.
Okay, how about I refer to him as Aztec Hercules from now on?
Fine, whatever. Do whatever you want. It will make no sense to anyone.
Whatever. Anyway. So then, anyway, Aztec He-Man in your face is like boasting about the fact of having killed Ian.
Yeah, well, the fact that Ian's dead.
Like, yeah, exactly.
He actually thinks he's dead inside the watery chamber.
He says, he's telling Susan about this, right?
Yeah, and 3 seconds later, we see Ian emerge.
Ian pops up right behind him and delivers like a one-liner and then just whack-a-moles.
Yeah, destroys Ixtar. Like,
totally
once again, proving that he's the better man. So,
yeah,
he saves Susan. They're all back together. All four of them are there. All they need to do...
In the temple.
All they need to do is get to the TARDIS.
Yeah. And they use the rope thingy, but the rope breaks.
Yeah. So Susan, it's emerges. Susan and Ian need to go off to reopen the secret entrance.
Back to the garden, back through the tunnel, open the door again.
And do the whole thing again. But of course now Ian knows the way, so it's fine.
Yeah, that's true. So they do happened before. They split up.
Into a random subdivision of grouping again.
Yeah, like, with Ian and Susan.
Why Ian and Susan? I guess because it just hasn't happened for a while.
Yeah, exactly. So they
could have equally taken Barb, he could have equally taken the Doctor. Whatever.
Which is so weird. Like, clearly you need muscle for this, right? And he is muscle.
There is no other muscle. It's just Ian. Like, so, maybe Ian just needs an assistant. And
it's not
anyone.
Just that. Like, he picks the slowest, weakest member of the group.
No, Susan is surely faster than the Doctor.
Okay, fine. Who also happens to be a wanted fugitive.
Yeah.
Like, he picks the one person he really should not. He should pick the Doctor, is what he should do.
Yeah, probably.
Because Barb Wire is, like, the goddess and she shouldn't be wandering around.
To be honest, whenever any of these tasks emerge, I just think Ian should probably just go on his own. Like, whoever he takes is going to slow him down.
Exactly.
He's the man.
Like, Susan, you're tiny, just hide somewhere in the corner, it's fine. We'll get you in a bit.
Exactly.
We'll get you at the end of the episode.
Can you imagine Rambo, like, needing to take along, like, an assistant everywhere he went? It would just screw his shit up.
Yeah.
Like, Ian, like, needs no one.
Totally agree. It doesn't matter. Anyway,
they get to the secret garden. And they're trying to get in, but the High Priest of Knowledge is there. They find him. He's on the ground. He's unconscious.
Yeah, before then, Max Factor is telling Aztec Hercules to kill Ortlok with Ian's machete.
Yeah.
And,
okay, yeah. So we get told that it's going to happen. Then they get there and they see Ortlok on the ground, been knocked out by Ian's club.
Yeah,
Ian's club's right next to him.
And now the talking point, dude, the logic of this scenario doesn't work at all for me. Because Max Factor says Ortlok will be even more convinced if he sees Ian. Like,
yes.
If he sees Ian live, he will be even more convinced of her divinity.
Right. So it's as if they know that he's going to go back there.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but it's also
true.
Really weird, because he doesn't say, now kill Ian or Bob. He says, kill Ortlok.
Yeah. But also, like, I see where the logic does fall down a little, and maybe there is a solution to this, but I didn't see it. So, where they've placed Ortlok's body...
Yeah.
Outside the
He's
secret
alive,
entrance
by the way.
Of the table.
He's alive.
Outside the entrance to the secret part of the temple.
Yeah.
They know exactly where.
They know precisely where
Ian and Susan are going to be.
And Ortlok. It's so weird.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, so 30 seconds later, like, the entire plan has just played out in one super quick scene.
Yeah. So the club's there, like, everybody turns up and they're like, oh my god, that's his club, like, Ian's a murderer. Well, not a murderer, like, he tried to knock out
It's an Aztec
Ortlok.
Episode of CSI.
Yeah. So. Ortlok wakes up and basically says, yeah, Barb is definitely not a goddess, these people are bastards, let's go with all the bad people's plans.
Yeah, and Maybelline even tells Tortellini that he had this vision and that they are to bury Barb alive. Which is so weird. It's like, oh, I had this vision.
Hush,
we place her in a room with three walls and then we put a fourth wall up there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. God. It was vicious.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's like... You know,
like sometimes...
It's the cask of Amontillado.
You know when you're like sitting there and you're planning out the perfect way to kill someone? It's like he's doing that, except out loud.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Exactly.
If you really hate someone, you're planning a really terrible way to murder them. He's like, yeah, I want to do some really bad stuff. Like, like a room with three walls and then the fourth wall like comes caving in. Yeah.
Yeah. And here
Let's
are,
do that
yeah.
stuff.
And just as we put in the final break, here are my top three options for final lines to deliver to her before she suffocates.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? Can I get like some sort of ranking list? Anyway, so...
Sorry.
Come back to Kaneko and the dog.
Proclaims Barb a false god is the main
thing. Yeah, basically, yeah. In the meantime, so then Yeah, cut back to Kanika watching the dog fashion this wheel for the pulley.
Yeah.
Because they need to build a pulley to open up the door again.
Yeah.
And
for the first time, really, the Doctor outright lies to Kanika.
Yeah, he pulls, what I've said, he pulls a, well, him.
Yeah.
And starts talking about
the Doctor.
Yeah. And then starts talking about what your taxa wants.
Yes, and so basically says Barb is definitely a real goddess. Like, everybody's bought into this idea that she's not, but she definitely is. You've got to believe me. Help me. So he's using Kamika's love for him against her.
Yeah.
And for his own selfish purposes. Wonderful.
And then we get to see Ortlok and Barb talking.
Yes, go on.
Ortlok doesn't believe her. Like, he doesn't believe a single word she says. Mm-hmm. Then she just says, you know what, but that's kind of what it is. And then he all of a sudden does believe her.
Well, and he kind of comes around to the idea that Klataxel's a bastard. Like, whatever the case, he comes around to the... Like, whether Barb is a goddess or not,
Klataxel
is behind this evil scheme, and that, like, there is wrongdoing.
Fair enough. Like, okay, fair enough. But he's
like, iffy as to whether she's...
True, but he does say, like, unfortunately, regardless of what he believes or not, he still cannot save Jan.
Yeah.
Like, that's just
what
happened.
But he does promise that he'll save Susan. He says he can save Susan, but he can't save Ian. That's what he says.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then cut back to the garden. The Doctor and Kamika are just about to split up.
Yeah.
And it's very sad.
The Doctor's
also, like,
finished his wheel.
Yeah. And she goes, I always knew that thing would take you away from me. It's like, what, in the last, what, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Like, you've maybe seen him fashion this wheel thing that, by the way, you have no idea what it is because you haven't invented the wheel yet. But you've seen him fashion this thing.
Which, as discussed at the time, like, as we were watching it,
yeah,
is super poor on the part of the Aztecs. Yeah. Haven't managed to fashion a wheel yet.
Yeah, but it's totally true, though.
Yeah, I know, but, like, this is, like, what, 1420 or something, they told us.
Maybe.
Like, what? Like, how have they not got wheels? I mean, I'm sorry, I'm showing off my historical ignorance.
No, fine.
They really should have wheels.
They really should have, yeah. But anyway, so they are now to split up. She's kind of accepted the fact that they will not get married and spend their lives together and whatever. Yeah. But then so she goes and meets Ortlok, who gives her, I guess, kind of his Aztec wallet. Like, he gives her this thing and says, like, oh, this is a symbol of all of my wealth, all of my earthly belongings.
The deeds to my house, basically.
Yeah, basically. Here are the keys to my beamer, and I'm now going to become a hermit.
Yeah.
He's like, oh.
And that is the last we ever hear of him.
Yeah, he's just this guy who's a major character in this storyline just suddenly Fs off into the forest.
It's as if he's so depressed by all the events of the day. Like, he's so overcome with grief that Barb isn't actually a goddess. He just has to, like, give up his life and go and live in a cave. Like, yeah, poor guy. Poor guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so now Ian and Susan are to be sacrificed, and the Doc, while assembling his, like, pulling mechanism, tells Barb to order Ortlok to release Susan, which is really weird, because, like, why would he even obey? Because he couldn't save Jan a moment ago. Why would he obey and save Susan?
Yeah.
And Jan. But then Maybelline turns up and...
he's a good guy. He doesn't want Susan to die.
Okay, fair enough. But then Maybelline turns up and says, yeah, you know what? Ortlok doesn't... He's not around anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in the forest.
Yeah.
And then in the cell... like the little prison cell or whatever, Kamika arrives. So Ian and Susan are in there. Kamika arrives and tries to basically bribe the guard. This is as per Ortlok's instructions.
Yeah.
She tries to bribe the guard with...
with Ortlok's house.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, here's the Aztec Visa card. Mexican Express. and Ian makes up his mind for him, quote unquote, by
bashing him over the head from the back.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Kamika does the honourable thing, though. Like, she then, even though the guard is out of commission, she takes the Visa card and puts it on the passed out guard.
Yeah. Like, Kamika's nothing but good.
Oh, she's a lovely woman.
Yeah, she's a lovely lady. No wonder the Doctor fell in love, eh?
Yeah. Turns out, by the way, spoiler alert, the fact that she did the honourable thing will now cost this poor guard's life. Like, his life. Anyway, so she then takes Susan to the temple, and Ian puts on the god helmet and walks, it seems from that shot, even deeper into the cell.
Yeah. So they go to collect Barb, they're taking her to, like, the ceremony or whatever. Ian's the closest guard to her, like, knocks out everyone around her and basically saves her.
Well, yeah, we get Maybelline and Tortellini plotting in the bushes first. Like, Maybelline explains his whole plan. It is to, quote, dispatch Ian and Susan. Well, that's not a quote. Dispatch the guy and Yataxa.
Yeah.
There's going to be an eclipse. Then we have the perfect sacrifice, then we're going to enter the temple again, bind barbed wire, and then back just in time for the sun to reappear.
But obviously Ian would never let that happen.
Exactly.
Which all leads up to, I mean, so...
Ian... He totally sugarcoats the whole deal as well by saying, Tortellini, you're going to be the next High Priest of Knowledge.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
And Tortellini just gets a pocket rocket. He's like, oh, so, I am on board, dude.
So getting back to where we were, they go to try and take Barb. Ian is the closest guard to Barb. And as they're taking her off, Ian knocks out the guards around him and tries to save Barb. But Ixta intervenes.
We have a little bit before that, though.
Oh, God.
Sorry, man. I'm really sorry.
I really want to get to this fight scene.
I know.
It's such a good fight scene. I
dude, you're going to get the fight scene in just a moment. So first,
please.
Kamika delivers, or Kanika, whatever her name is, she delivers Susan. And the doc basically repays her with the most callous and taciturn breakup in the history of breakups.
Well, he doesn't say anything, does he?
Exactly. But he is
just like, right, I'm off now.
He looks away.
Yeah.
He faces away from her.
Yeah, he doesn't even say, right, I'm off now. He just goes.
What, like, he just looks away and, like, has her leave. But the thing is, when she's left, we've got a little close-up of the doc's face, and he is clearly offended.
Oh, yeah, he is cut up by it. Yeah. But he has to do what he has to do.
I wonder, I'm really perplexed. Why did he not just go, you know what, fuck it, why don't you just come with us? I've already got three people with me. Well, I might as well have a fourth one.
Yeah.
You know? But anyway, it doesn't happen. So then He-Man and Maybelline, they arrive in the cell, see the guard passed out, see the Mexican Express card, and basically just brutally shish kebab him. Just, you know what? He-Man, kill this dude. He's a traitor.
Yeah.
Shish kebab.
Face off.
Face off. Bring your taxi to the sacrificial altar, is what he says. And, like, all the guards go to fetch the perfect sacrifice. Except one dude who's wearing more robes and headgear than Elton John. And I wonder if this guy's Ian at this point. That is my note. It's like, Ian? That's my note.
I thought...
Clearly Ian.
Yeah, I thought it was obviously Ian.
So obviously Ian. So yeah, okay, Max Factor arrives, this is what you said, go for it. He arrives, tries to stab her. Go for it, take off.
Yeah, so Ian basically roundhouses everyone.
Yep.
and tries to escape with Barb, at which point he is, like, Ixta intervenes and there's a face-off.
It is massive high face-off. Noon at the Aztec Corral.
Like, this is the best fight of the whole.
Oh, it's
like,
fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually pretty brutal and very well choreographed.
Yeah.
but Ian, again, shows what a man he is. But he goes one step further and actually murders this guy.
Yeah.
So he
throws him off.
Yeah. Ixta goes in for the final kill on Ian. Like, he's got him down on the ground. And Ian just catapults him off the high, off like a 200-foot temple and, like, destroys him on the ground.
Yep.
And is completely unaffected by this. Like, his face remains as stoic as ever. He's just murdered somebody for the first time in his life, presumably.
Yeah.
Like, why is... Like, I don't want to criticise. Like, I'm really pleased Ian is as hard as he is. But it's as if he's been to war. Like,
he is way too badass.
He is
for a science teacher.
Yeah. Like, he's gone from being, like, quite a buttoned-down science teacher who, like, doesn't want to even stalk Susan. Like, he thinks that that's a bit off. To going back in time.
Does he really? No, I don't remember that.
It's Barb who wants to stalk Susan in the first place, and Ian just comes along, right?
Well, he's the wheels. He just goes, you know what? Don't worry about it. I got a car. Yeah. He can stalk her even more efficiently.
But do you know what I mean? He's quite a buttoned-down guy. He has sensibilities.
I totally agree
and
with
all
you.
All of a sudden, he's now murdering Aztecs.
Do you reckon that they got
and
some?
He's completely fine with it. He doesn't tussle with it.
I reckon they got some like viewer feedback at this point, and the feedback said Barbara needs more screen time. Like we think she's too meek. That's what the women viewers said, and the male viewers said we want there to be more fighting, more action.
Yeah,
and so ipso facto, they give her this very good speaking role, like proper acting performance. And they give him, all of a sudden, like, the keys to the tank.
Yeah. And, but I think they could have done it maybe a little better.
Yeah.
Maybe there could have been a build-up. Ian's just like...
We could have just been more reluctant.
Well, yeah, or just worried, even.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Like, he just seems perfectly... I know he had to kill him. Like, I know Ian had to kill Ixta.
Yeah.
Because Ixta was, like, hell-bent on...
On killing him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it needed to be done. It was something Ian did need to do.
Yeah.
But he didn't seem to have any trouble before or after it.
Totally
like,
agree.
I'd have thought after he killed Ixta, he'd have been kind of like, holy shit. I just threw a man to his death.
Mm.
No, nothing. It's a completely deadpan face.
Yeah.
Stiff upper lip.
Anyway.
Well done, Ian. Well done.
Yeah, well done.
He is a cold-blooded killer now.
Mm.
Yeah.
Anyway, they run into the tomb. And Maybelline basically goes, let them go. In fact, I think he says, let them go.
Yeah.
He walks up to the altar where the perfect sacrifice is, right? He's, mm-hmm. like, ready to be killed. Thanks the gods for, like, the eclipse or whatever. And then preps to cut his heart out. And that's it.
Yeah.
Like, essentially, history is okay. Yeah. With the exception of the High Priest of Knowledge having become a hermit. And one dude who was meant to be the leader of their armies having now been killed.
Shit, they've got no leaders for their armies.
No wonder Cortez won.
It was meant to be... Maybe that's why Cortez won. It was meant to be Ian or Ixtar. Ian kills Ixtar, then fucks off in a time machine.
Totally.
No leaders.
Anyway, yeah. Back in the tomb, the TARDIS is there now. And they have a little conversation about, like, the merits of time travel when you can't change history. And, well, I guess, like, the Doctor explains, like, even though you didn't save the civilization, at least you saved one person.
Yeah.
I.e. Ortlok.
Yeah.
Like, he's now spared the evil and malice of Aztec culture.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
Well done, guys.
Yeah. Everyone enters the TARDIS except for the Doc, who... Do you want to do the coin thing?
No, I think it's
okay. So the Doc, he puts the Aztec coin thing that he got from Kanika, mm-hmm. or Kanika, on the grave, and preps to go into the TARDIS, turns around, changes his mind, puts it in his pocket instead. So he's got, like, this little memento of, I guess, like, his love, right?
Yeah.
The one who got away.
Yeah.
And it is...
He really was into the love.
Like... Yeah, and I don't mean to be racist, but this is, like, his first proper human moment in the whole thing.
Well, racist against Time Lords?
Yeah, well, like, space aliens.
Well, it's the first time we really see a softer side of the Doctor.
Yeah.
That is true.
Totally.
Even though he ends up screwing the woman over, like, yeah. he does actually feel genuine love, though. And you see the look on his face. Super well acted, actually, William.
I agree, yeah. No, he's a fantastic actor.
He is a great actor. Like,
everyone in this episode is a great actor.
Yeah.
Everyone.
And by the way, like, to anybody who thinks we've overly ripped on Hartnell, like, I'd just like to make my feelings clear. I think Hartnell is a great actor. He just doesn't get enough takes.
Yeah.
Like, and he conducted him, like, in this episode, he did a really good job.
He did a fantastic job. Anyway, so...
Apart from that one shitting.
They're back in the TARDIS, and then we get the inevitable foreshadowing of, like, this is what's going to happen next time. And basically, they all get one line each.
Mm-hmm.
So Susan goes, these instruments, they say that we've stopped.
Yeah, it looks like we're back in the edge of destruction,
yeah.
basically.
The Doctor goes, which is strange, because these instruments say that we're moving. Ian says perhaps we've landed on top of something, and Bob says, or inside something.
Dong, 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 dong. Yeah.
And that's it. End of the Aztecs.
So, reviews.
Yeah, so I think we should lead off, because everybody's been so generous with their own opinions on this, which I love, by the way. Keep them coming, people.
Yeah, please do.
We're going to read out a couple of reviews, and actually we've decided to do them in full.
Yeah.
Because I think they're both excellent reviews, the two we picked out, and I just want to encourage people to keep reviewing. It's great. So this one comes from Gina. Gina says, this is the second time I've watched this story. It had been my first William Hartnell story and didn't enjoy it because I did not have a sense of the TARDIS crew's backstory. Watching it a second time in order after the other stories, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Between the Doctor's hit and quit it attitude with his fiance, Ian continuing to show how much of a badass he is at besting Aztec warriors in hand-to-hand combat, or the fact we didn't have to deal with Susan's uselessness and screaming grandfather, made this a great story. In watching it, I noticed similarities between this and New Who, including the Doctor full-on flirting with Kameika and subsequently leaving after getting engaged and a companion, Barb, having to come to terms with time travel and the desire to change the past. I also enjoyed the political intrigue of the manipulative and power-hungry Todoxil, which felt very adult in theme.
I think that's probably his real name.
Yeah, probably. She probably got it right.
Yeah.
We certainly didn't. Something I'm sure you guys will bring up is Susan's hypocrisy about not wanting to be married off to a stranger.
Bingo.
They kind of did.
Yeah.
Yet in Marco Polo, she doesn't seem to have much of a problem with it happening to Ping Cho. My last thought was my shock that Ian killed Ixtar. Let's sit with that for a moment. Like, anyway, thanks, guys, and I continue to enjoy your reviews.
Nice.
I think Gina nailed it.
Gina, thank you so much. Will you marry me? That is a fantastic review.
She actually, I hadn't read the review in full before we just did it there. She actually perfectly predicted
she
what we were about to say.
Absolutely nailed it.
Gina completely gets this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm glad somebody else thinks that, because I was getting a little bit worried that I was ripping too hard on some of the stuff, but no.
Yeah, by the way, in case anyone thinks that we're not reading that we're reading this mail for the first time now, we read it for the first time just a moment ago, because we literally did not want to be too influenced in our own review of this.
Yeah, exactly.
So we read this just a moment ago. Freaking nailed it, Gina. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It was almost as if she'd already listened to our episode. Are we that predictable?
Very possibly.
Anyway, thank you very much, Gina.
Yeah, thanks very much. Next up, we've got Alex, and he says, I fucking love this cereal. Definitely in my top three Hartnell cereals. It really has all the best aspects of early Doctor Who, and is probably the best cereal for the First Companions in terms of utilizing all of them and the Doctor in their own good storylines. Because of them all having their own strong storyline in this cereal feels very modern in how tight the narrative holds together. In addition to this, the narratives themselves are all very entertaining and enlightening, both in terms of modern Doctor Who canon and the intended educational value of the Hartnell era. Bang on, by the way, Al.
Very
nice.
Good.
He goes on and says, they have action, moral dilemmas, and even, gasp, romance with the Doctor. The Doctor in this story is very interesting canon-wise, as it establishes his long-running non-involvement procedure, but also is contradictory canon-wise with the Doctor actually being romantic, one of the few instances of it in the whole series. The only other most direct one I can think of is the McGann movie, which I have yet to see, by the way, Al, but looking forward to it. He goes on, the moral dilemma about the execution is amazing. It feels very real and modern, while also helping provide for some educational tidbits about Aztec culture and its destruction. Almost like something that could be in a Russell T. Davis era Doctor Who story, with its ultimate goal being acceptance and respect of other cultures and values, even if we, both the viewer and companion, can't fully understand them. The villain in the serial is also fairly creepy, and the storylines are so well done that I still felt upset while rewatching it. The story is just totally fantastic, and I'd give it at least a 4.8. Maybe even a 4.9 out of 5. Hell, you know what? I think this one is damn near perfect, and would honestly give it a 5 out of 5. Well,
good for you.
Good for you, Al.
Certainly, I respect that opinion completely.
Yeah, same here. I'm not going to give it a 5 out of 5 myself.
Well,
but
we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Thank you very much, Al, and thank you very much, Gina. Both of you, can I just adding before we go into our own reviews, these reviews are freaking amazing, and I think we need to get them on the website. So if you like, please, please do feel free to post them as a comment on the page in question for this episode.
Absolutely.
People can read them for their own pleasure.
But I'd just like to come back to some of Al's points.
Go for it.
I think it really was true. This episode did feel more modern than others. And as you commented,
absolutely.
Like the way the suspense was built was a lot less amateurish, shall we say, than in some of the early episodes.
So nicely done.
Yeah. It was as if they got a new production company in.
We say that in every episode, by the way.
Maybe they're using a new production company each time. Who knows? But yeah, it did have a very modern feel about it, and it reinforced a lot of lot of the characters' backstories, as Gina said.
Mm.
We did get to know people a little bit better.
I think
And we found out that Barbara actually has some guts, and actually can be useful. I think those were both right on.
Yeah, totally.
But anyway, to our reviews.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Do you want to go first?
Thank you very much. Just to paraphrase someone I know quite well, I always go first. I can't believe this again. I don't know why I'm giving you this weird American Barbie accent, but still. Anyway, wow. So I think The Aztecs is a great episode, and I think in some ways it is in fact better than The Keys of Marinus, but I'm going to say The Keys of Marinus is still my favourite one so far. I think it is much better, and okay, here's where The Aztecs is better than Marinus. It is much more tightly written. It's not as all over the place, because obviously Marinus had every episode was in a different place, and you basically had to set it up all over again every single time.
Mm-hmm.
So this is much tighter, we get to know all the characters much better, and the dialogue is much better, and so on and so forth. But here's where it's not as good. A, it's not sci-fi, and I watch Doctor Who because I love sci-fi.
Mm.
I'm not a huge fan of these historical whatever episodes. Mm-hmm. They're good, but they're not as good as when they're in space battling aliens. And two, once again, by the way, I've got 2 points. I fucking hate this. It does just kind of require you to overlook a lot of strange illogical scenarios. I love the fact that there's a love story. I love the fact that we get to see Barb properly acting. She's no longer just a damsel in distress. She's an actual person with with character, backbone, integrity, and so on and so forth. I love her performance in this. But I'm just not that thrilled about the story. Yeah, what can I say? I'm going to give this story... Have to think about it for a second. Haven't actually thought about this until now. I'm going to give this story 4.0 out of 5. I mean, this 4.0 because it is a fantastic story, but it's not sci-fi, and thus not worthy of more than 4.0. Sorry.
Okay.
For it, flat lap.
I think I identified some of those things before we started talking, actually. I kind of feel the same. Like, it's possibly not as exciting a story as The Keys of Marinus. Like, true. The Keys of Marinus really had me gripped. I had no idea where it was going to go because it was true sci-fi.
Yeah.
This one, you know, is a historical drama.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly
what
it is.
And, you know, in these early episodes of Doctor Who, I understand completely that they're meant to have an educational aspect and that some of the episodes do, like, completely take sci-fi out of the equation.
Yeah.
But I think it kind of maybe made the story a little bit more predictable.
I think so as well.
In its way. But I would agree that it's actually far better put together.
Yeah.
I mean, there were problems with The Keys of Marinus. I mean, I think as one of our commenters actually said, the court scene with Ian, it could have been done a lot better. I love that there was a court scene.
In fact, you said... It was great that they had a court scene, but the execution was poor.
I still love that, by the way. Thank you so much for sending that in. You know, I think what was most disappointing was actually the doctor's part in that for me.
Yeah.
He just turned up at the last minute, tried to be a lawyer, and it all fell a little bit flat. The court case just unraveled. But I love that there was a court case, and, you know, in some extra, you know, in some, you know, other world that they have courts.
So how would you transpose that onto the Aztecs?
They work the other way around. But the point is that it can't work in the Aztecs because you've got like a fixed point in time, which is the Aztec era. So you can only do so much with it. You can't apply these crazy ideas to the Aztecs. We can only work with what we know about the Aztecs. Sure, I mean.
Yeah, I do see what you mean.
Like, that's why it's more difficult to do a truly like wild story.
That's true. I'm sorry to cut you off, but like, to interrupt your mini review, but the parallel, right, sorry dude, the parallel is that when they act according to the rules of their relative context. So in Marinus, he acted according to the rules because he all of a sudden turned into a lawyer, and that was like the lawyer planet.
Yeah.
Whereas here we get Jan acting like a warrior because he's among warriors.
Yeah, and we get the Doctor advising that Ian should act as a warrior.
Very true.
And that Barbara should pretend to be a goddess.
Very true.
So they place themselves in the historical context. Like, it's very well put together. It's a very interesting story, but I don't think, for me personally, it jumps all over the place enough. It's like there's not enough super crazy stuff going on. I mean, there's intrigue, there's you know, little conspiracies, there's, you know, little flights of fancy, but it can't go truly wild.
True.
Which was why I was going to mark it slightly below The Keys of Marinus. I don't want to be harsh on it because I think it was a brilliant episode.
Yeah.
But I would like to submit a 4.2.
Nice.
For the Aztecs. Because, I mean, it's hard to fault it. My only problem with it is the same as yours, which is that I don't think that it's quite as interesting when you don't have any science fiction element to it at all. They've just been placed back in time, which in itself is interesting, but maybe not quite as...
I hate to do a Star Trek reference, but it feels a little bit like whenever the Star Trek, the Enterprise crew, came to a planet that was exactly identical to any historical era in Earth's history. It's like, oh, now we're in the Wild West world, like the Wild West planet.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's literally just...
A Wild West...
Story.
TV story.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's a little bit of a letdown.
But well, I mean, I think letdown's too strong. What I'd say is, like, it's completely personal preference. I'm sure there are people out there who actually prefer that it's set in historical context. And I did learn some interesting stuff about the Aztecs.
Same here.
And I loved hearing about it.
Cartoons and things.
Yeah. But, you know, it's completely personal preference. So, you know, I don't want to say that this is something that is wrong with this episode. I just want to say maybe it's not personally my favorite way of doing it.
Sure.
But there you go.
So what were you giving it? 4.2? Okay.
Yeah. Which I think is a, you know, reasonably objective mark.
Yeah.
I'd like to give it, because it is such a good story. It's so well written. The characters come out so much better than maybe they have done previously.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Nice. I think 4.2 is fair.
I think, by the way, our reviews have now finally done another slalom. Like, I was above you the last time, and now you're slightly above me. So, yeah. I like it. It's good.
Good.
All right.
Pleased to hear it.
That concludes a review of The Aztecs. Tune back in next time for a review of The Sensorites.
Yeah.
Which, allegedly, is one of the worst, if not the worst, William Hartnell story. I haven't seen it.
No, I haven't seen it, so I'm going to suspend judgment.
Okay, I'm also suspending judgment, but I'm so happy that it has the potential of being absolute rubbish.
Because I enjoy the really rubbish ones, most of all.
Like, it's going to be fun.
I had a great time watching The Edge of Destruction, which I will still rip on forever, by the way.
Yeah, same here. We completely respect that some of our listeners disagreed with that, but that's fine.
Well, I would like, well, it's great. I love the discussion. I love the debating point.
Yeah.
I would like them to actually tell us why it was good.
Yeah, exactly.
I haven't heard from anyone why The Edge of Destruction was good.
Exactly. Go to whobackwhen.com, click on The Edge of Destruction, and add your views or disagreements as a comment. Or agreements, if you like.
Yeah, but I'd love to hear.
Yeah.
Like, I would really, seriously love to hear.
So, in conclusion, we're going to do The Sensorites next time, so please do send in your mini reviews of that, and we'll read them out loud on the podcast.
Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
And thanks again for sending in your reviews, Al and Gina. Please do post them on the website as well in writing. And yeah, follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ponkin. You are at?
One Too Many Mornings. Even never used.
Basically, never used your Twitter account.
I used it once 2 years ago.
Like us on Facebook.
I'll get your messages.
Facebook.com/whobackwhen. Plus one us on Google Plus, whatever that is. I haven't really used Google Plus, but yeah, plus one us. Yeah. It's good for SEO.
Seems great, yeah.
Like and review us on iTunes, and please do visit the website.
Go for Reddit.
Go for Reddit. Brought us up on Reddit. Oh, by the way, thank you so much to @Twister360, who tweeted me to mention that he created a subreddit for Who Back When. That's reddit.com/r/whobackwhen.
I love this guy.
Awesome. Twister, you're a freaking hero. Twister360, follow him on Twitter.
A friend of Who Back When.
A friend of Who Back When. If you're a friend of Who Back When, you're a friend of Twister's. All right. That's it for us this week. Tune in next time. And yeah, rock on, shamalama ding dong, metal, pip pip, toodle pip. Shit, what else could you possibly steal from me? By the way, okay, I just want to add a little disclaimer. Every single time that I say that Flappy has nicked one of my taglines, that doesn't mean so much to people who don't know me, but I say all those things literally all the time. Like, my life is comprised of those things and quotes from Wayne's World. So,
yeah, you're like one walking cliche of yourself.
That's
like,
exactly right. Thank you so much.
He's just cool.
This, by the way, exemplifies why I'm so fucking frustrated with Flappy. God, anyway. So, yeah, shamalama ding dong. Catch you next time.
Okay, don't give me a chance to talk then. You've taken away all my ammunition. Fine. Well done. Well done. I'm going to go home now and just be unhappy. So, goodbye.
Back when.